Next morning, he bounded out of bed and rushed to the kitchen. The washing up was so dismally real that Bilbo was forced to believe the party of the night before had not been part of his bad dreams, as he had rather hoped. The dwarves had gone. He began to whistle loudly, trying to forget all about them, when in walked Gandalf.
"My dear fellow," said he, "whenever are you going to come? They left you a message, because they could not wait."
"What message?" said poor Mr. Baggins, all in a fluster.
"Great elephants! If you had dusted the mantelpiece, you would have found this just under the clock," said Gandalf, handing Bilbo a note.
And this is what Bilbo read.
"Thorin and Company to burglar Bilbo. For your hospitality, our sincerest thanks, and for your offer of professional assistance, our grateful acceptance. Terms, cash on delivery, up to and not exceeding 1/14th of total profits, if any. All travelling expenses guaranteed in any event. Funeral expenses to be defrayed by us or our representatives. Thinking it unnecessary to disturb your esteemed repose, we have proceeded in advance to make requisite preparations and shall await your respected person at the Green Dragon Inn, Bywater, at 11 a.m. sharp, trusting that you will be punctual. We have the honour to remain yours deeply, Thorin and Company."
"That leaves you just 10 minutes. You will have to run," said Gandalf.
"But," said Bilbo.
"No time for it," said the wizard.
"But," said Bilbo again,
"no time for that either. Off you go."
Pushing his keys into Gandalf's hands, and running as fast as his furry feet could carry him down the lane, past the great mill, across the water, Bilbo was very puffed when he got to Bywater, just on the stroke of 11.
"Bravo," said Balin, looking at him.
Just then all the others came round the corner of the road from the village. They were on ponies, and each pony was slung about with all kinds of baggages, packages, parcels, and paraphernalia. There was a very small pony, apparently for Bilbo.
"Up you get, and off we go," said Thorin.
"I'm awfully sorry," said Bilbo, "but I have come without my hat, and I have left my pocket handkerchief behind, and I haven't got any money."
"Don't worry," said Dwalin. "You will have to manage without pocket handkerchiefs and a good many other things before you get to the journey's end."
So, on a fine May morning, they jogged off from the inn on laden ponies, Bilbo wearing a dark green hood and a dark green cloak borrowed from Dwalin. They had not been riding very long when up came Gandalf, very splendid on a white horse. He had brought a lot of pocket handkerchiefs and Bilbo's pipe and tobacco. At first, they passed through the green fields of the Hobbit lands. Then they came into the Lone Lands, where there were no people left, no inns, and the roads grew steadily worse. Not far ahead were dreary hills, rising higher and higher, dark with trees. Everything seemed gloomy and dull.
"To think it will soon be June,"
grumbled Bilbo, as he splashed along behind the others in a very muddy track. It was after tea time, he was soaked, his hood was dripping into his eyes, his cloak was full of water, the pony was tired, and the others were too grumpy to talk.
"I'm sure the rain has got into the dry clothes and into the food bags," thought Bilbo. "Bother burgling and everything to do with it. I wish I was at home in my nice hole by the fire with a kettle just beginning to sing."
It was not the last time that he wished that. It began to get dark as they went into a deep valley with a river at the bottom. At last they stopped. Thorin muttered something about supper and finding a dry patch to sleep on. Not until then did they notice that Gandalf was missing.
"Just when a wizard would have been most useful, too," groaned Dori and Nori.
They decided in the end that they would have a camp where they were. Dwarves can make a fire almost anywhere, but they could not do it that night. There they all sat, glum and wet and muttering. Bilbo was sadly reflecting that adventures are not all pony rides in May sunshine, when Balin said,
"There's a light over there."
There was a hill some way off, thick with trees. Out of the dark mass they could see a light shining, a reddish, comfortable-looking light, as it might be a fire or torches twinkling.
"Now it is the burglar's turn," said Thorin. "You must go on and find out all about that light, and if all is perfectly safe, come back quick. If not, come back if you can. If you can't, hoot twice like a barn owl and once like a screech owl, and we will do what we can."
Off Bilbo had to go, before he could explain that he could not hoot even once like any kind of owl any more than fly like a bat. But at any rate, hobbits can move quietly in woods. So, naturally, he got right up to the fire, for fire it was, without disturbing anyone. And this is what he saw. 3 very large persons sitting around a very large fire of beech logs. They were toasting mutton on long spits of wood and licking the gravy off their fingers. Also, there was a barrel of good drink. But they were trolls. Even Bilbo could see that.
"Mutton yesterday, mutton today, and blimey if it don't look like mutton again tomorrow," said one of the trolls.
"Never a blinking bit of man flesh have we had for long enough," said a second. "What the hell William was a-thinking of to bring us into these parts at all beats me."
William choked.
"Shut your mouth," he said, as soon as he could. "You can't expect folk to stop here forever just to be et by you and Bert. You've had a village and an half between you since we came down from the mountains. How much more do you want?"
After hearing all this, Bilbo thought he must do something at once. He should have gone back quietly and warned his friends, but he decided to do a bit of good, quick burgling. He could not go straight back to Thorin and Company empty-handed. So, at last, he crept behind a tree just behind William, plucked up courage, and put his little hand in William's enormous pocket. There was a purse in it, as big as a bag to Bilbo. "Ah, this is a beginning."
It was. William turned round at once and grabbed Bilbo by the neck before he could duck behind the tree.
"Blimey, Bert, look what I've copped," said William. "What is it?"
said the others, coming up.
"Lummy if I knows. What are you?"
"Bilbo Baggins, a bird, a hobbit."
"A burr hobbit?"
said they, a bit startled.
"What's a burr hobbit got to do with my pockets anyway?"
said William.
"And can you cook 'em?"
said Tom.
"You can try," said Bert.
"He wouldn't make a mouthful," said William. "Not when he was skinned and boned."
"Perhaps there are more like him about, and we might make a pie," said Bert. "Here, you, any more of you sneaking in these here woods, you nasty little rabbit?"
"Yes, lots," said Bilbo. No, none at all, not one."
"What you mean?" said Bert.
"What I say," said Bilbo, gasping. "And please don't cook me, kind sirs. I'm a good cook. I'll cook a perfectly beautiful breakfast for you, if only you won't have me for supper."
"Poor little blighter,"
said William.
"Poor little blighter. Let him go."
"Not till he says what he means by lots and none at all," said Bert. "I don't want to have me throat cut in me sleep. Hold his toes in the fire till he talks."
"I won't have it,"
said William.
"I caught him anyway."
"You're a fat fool, William," said Bert, "as I've said afore this evening."
"And you're a lout."
"And I won't take that from you, Bill Huggins," says Bert,
and put his fist in William's eye.
There was a gorgeous row. Bilbo had just enough wits left when Bert dropped him on the ground to scramble out of the way. Soon the trolls were locked in one another's arms and rolling nearly into the fire, kicking and thumping. Right in the middle of the fight, up came Balin. The dwarves had heard noises from a distance, and after waiting for some time for Bilbo to come back, or to hoot like an owl, they started off, one by one, to creep towards the light as quietly as they could. No sooner did Tom see Balin come into the light than he gave an awful howl. Bert and Bill stopped fighting immediately. Before Balin knew what was happening, a sack was over his head, and he was down.
"There's more to come yet,"
said Tom,
"or I'm mighty mistook. Lots and none at all it is," he said. "No barrow hobbits, but lots of these here dwarves. Let's get out of the light."
And they did. With sacks in their hands, they waited in the shadows. As each dwarf came up, pop, a nasty, smelly sack went over his head. Soon Dwalin lay by Balin, then Feely and Keely together, then all of them piled in a great heap, uncomfortably near the fire.
"That'll teach 'em,"
said Tom. A nice pickle they were all in now, all neatly tied up in sacks, with three angry trolls arguing whether they should roast them, mince them, boil them, or just sit on them one by one and squash them into jelly. And Bilbo, up in a bush, with his clothes and his skin torn, not daring to move for fear they should hear him. It was just then that Gandalf came back. But no one saw him. The trolls had just decided to roast the dwarves now and eat them later. That was Bert's idea, and after a lot of argument, they had all agreed to it.
"Well, no good roasting them now. It'll take all night," said a voice.
Bert thought it was William's.
"Don't start the argument all over again, Bill," he said.
"Who's arguing?"
said William, who thought it was Bert that has spoken.
"You are.
You're a liar."
And so the argument began all over again.
"No good boiling them. We ain't got no water, and it's a long way to the well and all," said a voice.
Bert and William thought it was Tom's.
"Shut up,"
they said.
"Shut up yourself,"
said Tom, who thought it was William's voice.
"You're a booby."
"Booby yourself."
And so the argument began all over again and went on hotter than ever until at last they decided to sit on the sacks one by one and squash them and boil them next time.
"Who shall we sit on first?"
said the voice.
"Better sit on the last fella first."
He thought Tom was talking.
"Don't talk to yourself, but if you want to sit on the last one, sit on him. Which is he?"
"The one with the yellow stockings."
"Nonsense, the one with the grey stockings,"
said a voice like William's.
"I made sure it was yellow."
"Yellow it was."
"Then what did you say it was grey for?"
"I never did, Tom said it."
"That I never did, it was you."
2-1, so shut your mouth."
"Who are you a-talking to?"
said William.
"Now stop it," said Tom and Bert together.
"The light's getting on and dawn comes early. Let's get on with it."
"Dawn take you all and be stoned to you,"
said a voice that sounded like William's, but it wasn't. For just at that moment the light came over the hill, and William never spoke again, for he stood turned to stone as he stooped, and Bert and Tom were stuck like rocks as they looked at him. And there they stand to this day, for trolls must be underground before dawn, or they go back to the stuff of the mountains they are made of, and never move again.
"Excellent,"
said Gandalf, as he stepped from behind a tree and helped Bilbo to climb down out of a thorn bush. Then Bilbo understood. It was the wizard's voice that had kept the trolls bickering and quarrelling until the light came and made an end of them. They untied the sacks and released the furious dwarves. They had to hear Bilbo's account of what had happened to him twice over before they were satisfied.
"Silly time to go practising pinching and pocket-picking," said Bombo, "when what we wanted was fire and food."
"And that's just what you wouldn't have got of those fellows without a struggle in any case," said Gandalf. "Anyhow, you're wasting time now. Don't you realise that the trolls must have a cave or a hole dug somewhere near to hide from the sun in? We must find it."
They followed the tracks up the hill until, hidden by bushes, they came on a big door of stone leading to a cave. But they could not open it, not though they all pushed while Gandalf tried various incantations.
"Would this be any good?"
asked Bilbo.
"I found it on the ground where the trolls had their fight."
He held out a large key. Gandalf grabbed it and fitted it into the keyhole. The stone door swung back with one big push, and they all went inside. There were bones on the floor, and a nasty smell was in the air. But there was a good deal of food jumbled carelessly on shelves, and pots full of gold coins. Clothes hanging on the walls, and several swords of various makes, shapes, and sizes. Two caught their eyes particularly, because of their beautiful scabbards and jewelled hilts. Gandalf and Thorin each took one of these, and Bilbo took a knife in a leather sheath. It would have made only a tiny pocket knife for a troll, but it was as good as a short sword for the hobbit.
"Let's get out of this horrible smell,"
said Feely. So they carried out the pot of coins, and such food as was untouched and looked fit to eat, and a barrel of ale which was still full. By that time they felt like breakfast. After they had slept, they all mounted up once more and jogged along again on the path towards the east.
Where did you go to, if I may ask?
Said Thorin to Gandalf as they rode along.
To look ahead.
And what brought you back in the nick of time?
Looking behind.
Exactly. But could you be more plain?
I went on to spy out our road. It will soon become dangerous and difficult. I had not gone very far, however, when I met a couple of friends of mine from Rivendell.
Where's that?
Asked Bilbo.
Don't interrupt, said Gandalf. As I was saying, I met two of Elrond's people. They were hurrying along for fear of the trolls. It was they who told me that three of them had come down from the mountains. I immediately had a feeling that I was wanted back. So now you know. Please be more careful next time, or we shall never get anywhere.
Thank you, said Thorin.